Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who's covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio. Have on as my guest my friend. Kind of think of him as a former Warriors beat writer. He was for a little while. It was awesome when he was around. Sometimes it's awesome. It is ESPN senior writer for the NBA, Tim Bontemps. Timmy, how you doing today? Thanks for being on.
Appreciate you, TK. It's a very kind intro. By the way, this is a very elaborate setup you've got for the pod. I'm very impressed.
We worked
got an
it.
Intro and everything.
Intro, yeah, I don't know. They put that on for me. Sometimes it happens automatically. Sometimes it doesn't. It's you say that today on a 49ers show, the wrap up for my other show came up on. So, you know, who knows? Things happen. Hey. They're magic in the air. But
right.
I'm glad you like it. I'm glad you see the. I don't know if you can see. You see the little decals and see your name up there.
It's yeah, magic, it looks great. It's this magic. Is a big time for production, man. I'm very impressed.
That's why we make the big money, Timmy. That's why we make the big money.
That's right.
Of course, have you on to talk some NBA, talk some Warriors. You were here, as you tend to be during the holiday season around the Warriors. I'm sure you, and they happen to be around a lot too. Not the greatest moments in Warriors history. Had a couple wins in there. The conversation now is what do they do? They are struggling. They're 18-18. John Kuminga is out for looks like for a while. They have made a trade for Dennis Schroeder. It hasn't helped. In fact, he's really been bad. I mean, it's short sample size, but like, where do you think they go with this, Tim? Like, around the league, just in your mind, you're someone who sees the big picture. What do the Warriors do right now?
I don't think there's much to do, Tim. And like, I think that's, you know, it's obviously a bit of a weird thing when you're talking about a guy like Stephen Curry, right? And Tim Keown wrote, I thought, a really interesting story digging into Steph. I'm sure you saw it this week for us, you know, kind of talking about this sort of existential question of when you have a guy like Stephen Curry, how are you supposed to handle the twilight of his career? And what are you supposed to really try to do? And, you know, I thought really the most prescient quote in the story I thought came from Mike Dunleavy, who said, look, if the guy's 25 and you're thinking about a decade ahead, then there's a long runway to sort stuff out. But it's a much different conversation when you're talking about a guy who's 36.
Yep.
And that really underscores everything that's going on with this Warriors team. Because at the end of the day, the two timelines plan, for as much as it's been talked about and all the, you know, light years ahead and everything else that has gone on the past few years with the Warriors, those draft picks were supposed to be the surefire bridge to whatever the next team was. And look, Jonathan Kuminga has had some moments lately. Obviously, it's unfortunate he just sprained his ankle. He's clearly a very athletic and talented player. Perhaps he becomes that guy in time. But I think as we're sitting here right now in the midway point of his fourth year in the league and in the wake of obviously what's been a failed NBA career to this point and probably permanently after his Achilles tear for James Wiseman, the two timelines plan did not work. And I think you could probably just say it failed. And as we're sitting here right now, the Warriors don't have a clear path to their future post Steph Curry. And if they did, if there was a guy sitting there who was going to be the standard bearer for the team going forward, in a lot of ways, this would all be a lot simpler because you could say, hey, look, we're going to try to win as much as we can now, but we've also got a clear vision of what the future is going to be. Whereas right now, it's totally unclear what the future is going to be. And for as good as Steph is, he's not quite good enough to get this team where it needs to go by himself, or where it wants to go, I should say, by himself. And so that is the same kind of conversation and calculus that a lot of these teams with players like this are having, whether it's the Lakers, LeBron James and their draft picks, and what do they try to do to potentially get better? You look at what's going on with Denver, with Nikola Jokic. You look at what's going on in Milwaukee, with Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, all these teams are all in kind of the same position, albeit with different timelines with their stars, where they have supremely talented inner circle Hall of Fame players who are in their primes or the tail end of their primes, but they don't have enough depth around them to match up with the best teams in the league. And there's not a clear path to creating the kind of depth and star and talent around those guys to ultimately get them there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the two timeline plan. I mean, that was done when Wiseman fizzled, and I mean, it almost like gives them too much credit for it was a two-time plan. They just had the lottery picks. They were bad enough to get those lottery picks.
Yes.
And they declared a plan. That's fine. And I went with it and I wrote it. And I keep saying, you know, like, so they could get anyone. I wrote it.
Yeah. It's a good plan if the picks work. Like that, that whole thing, right? If you have the second pick in the draft and the seventh pick in the draft, that's got to become impact players. And, you know, Franz Wagner went a pick after Jonathan Kuminga.
Yep.
Jonathan Kuminga might become better than Franz Wagner. There's really no question who's the better player right now. If the Warriors had Franz Wagner, the situation would look a lot different. If the Warriors had drafted Tyrese Haliburton or LaMelo Ball, or, you know, name another impact guy from that draft, their situation would look a lot different. But they didn't. And it doesn't matter now. It's water under the bridge. But it does inform the situation they find themselves in now, because they don't have that infrastructure around staff to be an elite team. And so they're a okay to pretty good team that when, you know, their support players are making shots, they look like they could be really good. And when the support players are missing shots, which they have been a lot lately, then they look like a team that's going to be what they are now, which is 500 to slightly a little bit above. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the quote Steph had in the preseason. I don't remember exactly the line that he used, but whether it was we can be a respectable team or a average team, whatever the line was, that, like, Steph's a very bright guy. That's what the team is. They're an okay to pretty good team that doesn't really have the ceiling to be higher than that.
Yeah, and I'm going to write a little bit about this tomorrow. I don't want to talk too much about it here, but, you know, they'd say, hey, we won the 2022 championship. That was not that long ago. And I felt that too. Like, listen, you've got these lottery picks still. Wiseman, Wiseman was on that team. He was on that roster, which is it's hard to believe he was. Kuminga was on the roster. Yeah. Oh, Kuminga was on the active roster. I was saying he should play in the playoffs. Moody was on that roster. Moody played against Dallas in the West Finals. But they also needed the playoff run of Andrew Wiggins' career, and it probably will never see that again. And they needed Kevon Looney.
It's also Steph from 4 years ago.
Exactly.
Like that, it's and Draymond from 4 years ago. Like, this is the other thing, Tim, too. And like, obviously you've covered the league for a long time, and you're around Shaq and Kobe. You've been around this team. You've seen all time great teams. The weird thing about the league right now, guys like Steph Curry and LeBron James and Kevin Durant are not supposed to be this good at 36 and 37 and 40. Right? Like, you get to 36, like when LeBron James was 36, Carmelo was out of the league or on his way out. Dwayne Wade was out of the league or on his way out. These guys were not of the level that Kevin Durant and Steph Curry are. Like, those guys are still all NBA players. So it makes it very difficult when you are Mike Dunleavy and you are trying to decide what to do, when you have a guy like Steph that's playing at an all NBA level, that when he's right, is still a guy who can bend a game in a way very few, if any, other players in the league can. But he also is 36. He's been dealing with bursitis in his knees, this bilateral tendonitis, and like, he's not going to be able to do it on a nightly basis the way he could 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years ago. And it's only prudent to factor that into your decision-making going forward, because the runway with Steph Curry is much shorter than what the runway is going to be without him afterward.
Yes. And you don't want to think about life after Steph. I mean, I know that's being brought up just blow it up, see what you can get for everybody, maybe see what you can get for Steph. No, I just, you can't do what we've talked about this before. You're in this position. He's as good as he is. He wants to stay. Now, listen, if he doesn't want to stay, if they get to that point in a year or two, different conversation. But you have to try to get as good as you can without giving everything up. Do you think if they make a deal for Vucevic that gives up, you know, whatever stray cash for him, Gary Payton II, Buddy Hill, whatever, how good does that make him?
Not very. I mean, we're talking about all the same stuff, right? Like, Nick Vucevic has had a very good year by his standards. He shot the lights out compared to his career norms, certainly his norms of late. But that was not a good contract when it was signed at 3 years to $60 million. You got another 20 or so million dollars on your books for next year. And Nick Vucevic is not an 82, he's an 82 game player, not a 16 game player, to go back to the apocryphal Draymond Green quote that I think about a lot now. It's like, if you're trying to, for the conversation we're talking about, right? Nick Vucevic is not changing the destiny of this Warriors team. Like, he's just not. Like, he's a guy that has never made it out of the first round of the playoffs for a reason. And if he's on the Warriors, it's hard to see them getting out of the first round of the playoffs this year if he's playing any kind of real role, because his defensive limitations and the negative parts of his game, albeit he being a very good player, are not going to be conducive to having a successful deep playoff run. And any assets you're giving up for him, again, it's like you're kind of putting lipstick on a pig doing that. It's like the team is going to be improved, like he'll make them better, but like, is giving up a real asset for him materially changing the direction of the franchise? No, it's just trying to win an extra couple of games in the regular season and, you know, maybe make the sixth seed instead of the seventh seed. I don't think it makes a lot of sense for this team unless they could just get them for money savings. And even then I'd question whether it made a ton of sense, but giving up any kind of assets for him, I think, is sort of defeating the purpose of what it is the Warriors should be trying to do, which is figuring out, like we talked about it when we did the plus minus show, when I was out there, like you said it correctly, like they need to try to wait and make one more big swing if they can with Steph Curry at this point in his career. And that probably isn't going to happen in the middle of the season for many reasons, which we'll probably get into. And it could happen if the things fall the right way this summer. And so to me, what the Warriors should be doing is like the Dennis Schroeder move. You know, he is not a great mesh with the way Steve Kerr likes to play, despite how much Steve Kerr likes him as a player. And he hasn't hit shots. I think he'll hit more shots, but that was a fairly minimal cost to add a guy who could, in theory, give them another ball handler and help them right now, but also as a guy they could include in a trade in February if they want. So like, that was the kind of deal where at the time the Warriors made it, I think it made a lot of sense. I think adding money for next year, especially if it's money like Vucevic that I don't think anybody's going to be that interested in, it's harder for me to justify that unless it really is a cost of just taking on the salary for next year.
Yeah, and I threw out, I think, on the plus minus the other day, like, hey, what if you make it a protected pick, you know, 1 through 10, 1 through 12, but you're still you can't trade that pick again. Like, that's the problem. Like, you can protect it all you want. You can't trade that pick again.
Or you can maybe trade the better part
protection,
of it, right?
Yeah, protection. Yeah.
But you still get into, if you start trading first round picks, you just put yourself in a spot where it's very difficult to do stuff going forward. And to me, what the Warriors need to do is just acknowledge the situation they're in. And look, if they have another 12-3 stretch over the next month and they're sitting there going into the deadline, rocking and rolling, playing like they were in November, maybe things will look different. If they're hovering around 500, I just don't see Mike Dunleavy going, hey, what we need to do is to, you know, pump assets into this team to try to get to the sixth seed. I just don't, it doesn't strike me as the way he and the Warriors are going to operate. And frankly, I don't think they should operate that way.
Yeah. I mean, if Warriors fans get really mad about that, you know, oh my God, two timelines and they're not selling out for Steph's prime. It's like, I think they would, if there was a real thing there that would make a difference.
And yeah, for sure. If they could get a difference making player, of course they would go do that. Like, the Warriors have shown over and over again under Joe Lacob, whether it's Bob Myers or now Mike Dunleavy, who I think he's already proven to be one of the better execs in the league with the moves he's made since coming into the job. Like, they are not afraid to take risks and go after star players. Like, they poked around on Paul George. They looked at, like, they've tried to get guys in there to play with Steph. And, like, at the end of the day, to me, if the team is sort of like this until Steph retires, that's okay. Like, mm-hmm. it's not a disaster. It's not some failure, right? Like, this Warriors dynastic run that they've had is one of the great stories in the history of the league. Like, it has to end at some point. It's probably not going to end like John Elway. It might. Maybe something will happen and they land some star and Steph can go out on top of the world, but it's extraordinarily rare that you have the John Elway or Michael Jordan moment. It's much more often that you go out on a okay team. Like Tom Brady's last year, I think they lost in what, the first round of the playoffs?
Yep.
You know, like, they were an okay team that made the playoffs and they lost. Like, it's much more likely that it's going to be like that than it is Steph throwing haymakers in the finals. And look, I would love to see Steph throwing haymakers in the finals. That would be incredible theater. But I also just don't think it's a – I just think people, because of how good these guys are so late in their careers now, it has created sort of this warped
– It's extended. Yeah, they've extended everything.
Yeah, yep. It's just made it, I think, a little unrealistic for people to look at it. Because, look, if I'm a Warriors fan, I totally understand the idea – hey, why let's have another awesome team for Steph. Let's see Steph in the playoff. Like, I totally get the feeling and the thought process. But if you're Mike Dunleavy and you're the Warriors front office, like, you have to think about the next 5 to 8 to 10 years, right? You can't think about the next year. And especially when this team has not shown to be good enough. Like, I was in Cleveland on Wednesday. I was at the Cavs Thunder game. That was an incredible game. We saw the Cavs. You were at the Monday Night Football game. I was at the Cavs Warriors game. Mm-hmm. The Cavs didn't play well in that game. They won by 20. It was a lot like playing the Warriors 10 years earlier. Yeah. Like, the Warriors can't hang with the Cavs. They can't hang with the Celtics. They can't hang with the Thunder. And that, to me, like, that's okay. It should be expected. But I also understand fans going, well, we have Steph Curry. We've got to try to do everything we can to maximize Steph Curry. I just also think that those same fans in 2 or 3 years, when Steph is done, presuming he's done then, are going to be saying, well, why is the team bad? What are we going to do to make the team good now? It's like, well, sacrificed everything to make a run at the 4 seed in the West, and now we have nothing and we're stuck.
Hey, Tim, not everybody can build around Ty Jerome. Well, I just want to put it that way. My God. That's all I got to say. My God, Ty Jerome. Good Lord.
What an unbelievable season he and the Cavs have had. It's really something else.
Good for them. They're fun as hell to watch. And, we went to talk about it a little bit earlier. A couple more Warriors stuff. Jimmy Butler, I think we've talked about it, but I'm not like, okay, Warriors get a little worse. They go 1-3 on this road trip. Would that tilt the wheel for you to say, okay, maybe you really got to think about just getting this guy? It's going to cost Wiggins and probably don't put Kuminga in there. I don't know that it would cost Kuminga, but maybe you got to put a pick in there. Do you say,
this is sort of the same exact discussion, right? Like, what's the rational argument to do that? How can you look at this Warriors team and say, if you add Jimmy Butler to this team, they're really good enough to beat the Thunder. They're really good enough to beat a healthy Dallas team. Like, I just don't. I mean, Jimmy Butler is 35. He misses a decent amount of time as a player. He's going to want an extension. You know, the Heat have a stable and organization in the league, and they, after 5 years, obviously that's run its course there. So, like, would he help? Again, would it help the Warriors right now to have a motivated Jimmy Butler on the team? Sure. Is it helping them enough to materially change their situation? I just don't think so. I almost think it'd be the other way. If the Warriors were like, I don't know, if they were 24-12 and you were like, hey, we might have a real shot here. Mm. If we had one more big difference maker, even if he's 35, maybe that's enough for us to really go to war with the Thunder in a playoff series. But I just think it's hard to look at the Thunder or look at the Cavs and look at the Celtics and think you add Jimmy Butler to this team and subtract Wiggins and some other pieces, and that's going to be enough to really beat them. I think it's just going to be a slightly different version of the same outcome.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you lose in five instead of four.
Yeah.
It's more arguable. I wrote a column saying it should not be Jimmy Butler, and I don't think it will be Jimmy Butler. But he's a guy that's won playoff series when you didn't think he could. It would cost you money because I think it would cost an extension. Yes, I think then that's not the business you want to get into. But I can imagine a conversation or two and see where it goes. And maybe they couldn't even get him for Wiggins. Maybe the Heat would want him and get it.
The Heat don't want future money. So that, yeah. You know, at least long-term future money. So that's another complication of this whole thing, right? Like if they're going to take on long-term future money, they're going to want a fairly significant return, or they'll just hang on to him. I think it goes back to what you said again, on the Plus Minus Pod. And we did it a couple weeks ago, which is this team needs to be in position to make a big swing, a truly big swing, if it becomes available. And if you make any of these sort of ancillary moves for a first round pick, it's again, what you said before is the thing fans need to think about. If you trade a first round pick now, even if it's a protected pick, it really hampers your ability to go all in to get a big name player if they become available over the next year or so. And for this Warriors team, to me, that is what the focus has to be. Like, can we find the guy that's going to be the guy to take over for Steph, whoever that is? And if you have all your chips to push in, you look around the league, a lot of the teams have already cashed in their chips. So the fact that the Warriors have some young players, they have most of their draft capital, they can go after trades, not to the level that, say, Houston can, who's probably best positioned to get a star, but they're going to have the ability to offer something compelling for a player. And if a player wants to come to the Bay, which in the past they've shown they've wanted to, you know, that's going to give Golden State a chance to get in conversations with teams for high-level talent. And I think the Warriors just have to wait for that, unless this group shows something over the next month that they haven't shown over the last 6 weeks, which is that they are a legitimate threat to win a couple rounds in the West. Then maybe that calculus shifts. But right now, I just think it's a team that's probably destined for the play-in, assuming Steph stays healthy. And it's hard for me to justify putting significant assets into changing that.
I'll tread on the third rail a little bit here in Warriordom. I'll put you on the third rail. At some point, do they got to get rid of Draymond?
I mean, I think that sort of goes back to the Steph conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do I think it would make sense for them to trade Draymond if they could get positive value for him now? Sure. But I think that's one of those things where, like, you're going to do that if Steph, like, you're only going to do a Steph trade. Like, you're not going to, Mike Dunleavy's not trading Steph Curry, mm-hmm. like, auction him off, right? Like you said, if Steph went to the Warriors, which I'm not saying this is happening. Steph is, I think, very content to finish career with the Warriors, as I think he should. He's had an unbelievable career and he's going to be an Inner Circle Hall of Famer and got an unblemished legacy. But if he went to them and said, hey, look, we're not good enough. Let me have a run at playing some more and having a chance to win. I want to try something new at the end of my career. I think that's the only way you'd even entertain trading Steph. And similarly, I think with the way things have progressed, I think at this point, I don't think they're going to get a great return for Draymond Green. He's a hard guy to fit on a lot of teams, and he's got future salary owed to him. To me, you're only putting him in a trade if Steph blesses it and is like, yeah, this is fine. Or if Draymond comes to them, it says, I really want to play somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And I would assume that Draymond, like Steph, is not going to do that. So it's one of those things. Like, again, if you could turn Draymond into two unprotected picks or some like blowaway offer, sure, I would definitely trade him. But I don't think they're getting that kind of return. And frankly, after everything that he's been through with the team, unless somebody asks for it, I think it'd be better off for everybody for him to ride off into the sunset, having to play his whole career with the Warriors.
You've done a fine job on that third rail, Timmy. That was a good third rail answer. It is not going to happen anytime soon, but I wanted to throw that. It's because, you know, you got Jonathan Kuminga sitting there. Well, how could you get Jonathan Kuminga more minutes? You can just start him at power forward. And they did try that for a few games, and Kerr moved off of that. But that's the conundrum. Is he good enough to move Draymond off the starting power forward? Probably not, but man, you might want to look at it. You might be tempted by that.
And then I think the real question is, do you just stick longer with Draymond coming off the bench? But again, when they've tried that, to your point, like, it's not like that lineup was gangbusters. Nope. You know, nope. Like, well, they went away from it because it wasn't working. And that's where it all comes back to the same thing. Like, you know, it's okay that this stuff has not worked out the way the Warriors hoped it would. Like, they had a lot of pixie dust for a long time that everything just was working out great. And they had one of the great runs of all time. But it's like, there's a reason, like, all these things come to an end. They all end sometime. The only one that ever lasted longer than this really was the Duncan Spurs, and that's because they completely fell completely backwards into Kawhi Leonard. And that, like, extended all those guys' careers by several years as having an elite team. If you don't put Kawhi Leonard on that Spurs team with Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili, they look a lot like the Warriors, right? It's basically the same thing. And it looked like it was headed that way in 2018. I mean, they lost in the first round. Manu got hurt. They lose in the first round. Then they make this trade and get Kawhi. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, wow, they have this pterodactyl 20-year-old on their team. And then everything shifted. But the Warriors had two cracks at it, and they didn't get Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
I would compare that last Spurs championship to the Warriors in 2022. It was one championship for different reasons.
Yes.
It wasn't duplicated because they couldn't keep Kawhi there anymore. You know, it just,
yes,
there's these kind of end run last championships maybe were beyond the run of the main reason why they won a championship happen. And then they don't get duplicated. Because it was a lightning strike.
You can't expect 36-year-old Steph Curry to be the best player on the title team, right? Like, ideally, the second pick or the seventh pick would be an all-star right now. Mm-hmm. And then you'd be saying, okay, we got a young all-star. That guy's ascending. Steph's still really good. They can be sort of co-stars, and let's see where that gets us. But, you know, and look, maybe in the future, Jonathan Kuminga will get there. But as of now, he isn't. And that's where ultimately all this stuff comes back to, is the talent's just not where it needs to be for this team to be a championship level team. And like I said, my wife's family's from the Bay. They're all Warriors fans. They would love for the Warriors to be in the finals. But I would tell anybody, any Warriors fan listening, I would go watch the Cavs Thunder game, and I would watch that game. If you didn't, it was one of the best games I've ever been at in the regular season. It's a phenomenal game. I would watch that game and then have a real conversation with yourself about, is there a world where the Warriors can get that good this season? It's just hard for me to see what move could happen where I could sit there and say the Warriors are good enough to play a 7-game series with those teams and win. And so I think that if you're trying to be a championship level team, which, you know, we know what the Warriors standard is, it's to be a championship level team, not to be an okay team. If that's the standard, I think you have to really look at what are the moves, or what is the series of moves that's going to get us there to do that. I just don't see what is going to happen in the next month that could possibly get them in that conversation.
You know, else would probably tell you that watching Warriors versus Kings or just the Warriors recently,
The
Kings are not anywhere near the level,
no,
of the game that we saw.
No, it's what they were 12-3. So they're now what? 6-15.
Yeah.
Over 21 games. That's a quarter of the season. They're on a 25 win pace. I don't think they're a 25 win team.
It's been a tougher schedule.
Oh, for sure. But it's not, you know, that's a real, we're talking a real sample size.
No question. They've been bad.
Yeah. They've been bad for a month. So you know, it's like, that's where I say, like, I understand, I totally understand where fans are coming from on it. And as a storyteller and a basketball fan and a writer, I would love for a last ride of Stephen Curry. I would love it. It would be great. I mean, I told you when I was out there, I mean, the Warriors, even now, 10 years after this thing started, are just a drama machine and a story machine. And they're endlessly fascinating and interesting. But I also think it's okay for things to end and okay for things to not, like, it's, this isn't a fairy tale, right? It's the NBA is a very harsh reality business a lot of the time. And at least as of right now, the Warriors are living in the harsh reality of the situation they're in. And I just don't think there's a lot of ways to microwave that. And there certainly aren't any to me over the next month that can really materially change the situation that they're in, barring something completely out of the clouds happening.
I've taken almost all the time I've asked you to be on, but Tim, okay, around the, this is, we're getting up to the trade deadline.
I got more time, man.
All right. Let's go. Who do you think is, who are you looking at to be traded? Who are you looking at? Where's the hot spots in the trade market right now?
I mean, you know what's funny, Tim, is that I don't know if there's any.
No. Ooh.
It's I keep telling people, I don't know if there's going to be much movement at all. The combination of a lot of these teams having traded their draft picks already, a combination of the new CBA and the restrictions on teams between, you know, a team like Phoenix desperately trying to add players, but they've got Bradley Beal with a no trade clause and only one first round pick. And they don't have the ability to aggregate, to put players together. They can only trade one player out to bring in other players. It just makes it extraordinarily difficult for them to make moves. And then you have this first apron hard cap trigger. If you take in one more dollar than you send out in a trade, which has made it really difficult for teams, you know, that are kind of around the first apron, like Golden State, like some other teams that would like to do stuff. It makes it hard to add money because if you're bumping up against that number, you have to jump through six hoops and make a three-team trade to avoid having that trigger kick in. And I think it's going to really make it difficult for teams to make moves. My buddy Brian Windhorst has said for a long time that any three-team trade is really a zero-team trade. Hmm. And the problem with the current system right now, at least until everything expands, is that you really almost have to make every trade a three-team trade, which makes it very difficult to do anything, which is why I think if you ask me, like, what's the hot spot in the trade market or what are they? I think the only one that I can really point to is Cam Johnson with the Nets, who's making $22 million, which isn't an exorbitant amount and is a number that I think teams can get to. And he plays he's got a skill set as a combo forward who isn't going to get killed on defense, who can really light it up from behind the arc that teams are interested in. So if Cam Johnson is the doll of the bell of the ball, the free agent of the trade window here, I think that sort of underscores that the kind of moves we're going to see are the two guys that have already been traded from the Nets, Dennis Schroeder and Dorian Finney-Smith, the Warriors and Lakers, and Cam Johnson later. Solid role players in the $10 to $20 million range that can, you know, have a marginal to moderate impact on a team. Unless these other big name players are getting traded for each other, it's just going to be very hard for any of them to move.
God bless the Nets. My God, if you didn't have them, no one would be talking about anything.
That's right.
Well, Bradley Beal, no trade clause. Obviously, the Suns want to be in the Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler wants to be. I mean, I'm just summarizing what I would imagine.
It's not hard. He's walking around with purple and orange hair, Tim. Yeah, I think we can say Jimmy Butler would like to be a Sun. Yeah,
and the only possible way he could be is if Bradley Beal's involved in the trade. If he doesn't want to go there, he's got no trade, they'd have to find a third team that he would be interested in. Is there any way there's a third team out there that would want Bradley Beal that he would want to go to?
I'm not going to say no, because we've both been around the NBA long enough to know that strange things happen when it comes to these kind of situations. But I'll say what I said before and what we've reported before, which is that The Heat don't want to take on long-term money. Mark Bartelstein told Brian this week that he's never giving up his no-trade clause, and there haven't been any discussions with him about it. So if Bradley Beal is going to be traded, it's going to have to be to a situation he wants to be in. I doubt there's a ton he'd be super excited about being in. So it's not. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but I'm going to say it's gotten a lot more oxygen than it probably should, based off the number of hurdles that are required to get from where we are now to where Jimmy Butler is on the Suns. And again, the reason why the Suns are that interested in Jimmy Butler is because they have Bradley Beal, who's playing way below the level of the contract that Jimmy Butler would have, and Jimmy Butler's just better than him. So sure, if they could turn Bradley Beal into Jimmy Butler, that's a no-brainer. There's also a reason why it's a no-brainer, because Bradley Beal has a no-trade clause, has not been that great, and they don't really want to be paying him $50 million to be a borderline fifth starter. But that's the same reason why one first-round pick is not going to be enough to move him for real value, at least real value as far as Jimmy Butler goes. So it's a long-winded way of saying I won't rule anything out in the NBA, but I don't think you should expect to see Jimmy Butler get what he wants and far going to Phoenix goes.
And Mark Bartelstein's son runs what team? I'm trying to think now.
He runs the Phoenix Suns and was there, I believe, already when they acquired Bradley Beal in the first place. But
yeah,
I don't think Mark Bartelstein is going to be doing Josh any favors when it comes to waiving that no-trade clause.
No, he shouldn't.
No.
But it's just hilarious because everyone knows Mark, and I think I've talked to Josh a few times, and it's just this interesting way the NBA works, Tim. That league that you cover works in many interesting ways.
It sure does.
What other, maybe no big trades. What else is interesting you? I mean, we're at the Cavs. We can talk about Cavs Thunder was just terrific. And no Caruso, I guess. I was just watching and I didn't see him out there.
Yeah, he's been dealing with, I think, a hip injury. I should remember what it was. He's missed a couple games. He should be back, I think, fairly soon. He's been doing some stuff. And obviously, Chet Holmgren didn't play. But look, I thought that was a hugely important game for the league, Tim. I mean, both teams played Sunday and then played Wednesday. They had 2 days off before the game. My network spent 3 days really hyping up the game, talking a lot about it, having Jared Allen and Darius Garland on, treating it like the big game that it was. And then both teams went out and had incredible performances and had haymakers going back and forth. And it was like, it was as high level as you're going to see. I mean, the game, the only regular season game that I think really was of that kind of caliber that I've been to was the Warriors-Cavs game on Christmas Day, the first year Durant was there when Kyrie hit the shot late in the game. But like, you're talking about that game, you're talking about the Steph game in OKC against the Thunder, when he hit the half court shot, the double overtime game. It was that kind of game, and for the amount of attention that we paid to it with these two teams that are emerging, in this transition period for the league, I thought it was hugely important. That game was great. I hope a ton of people watched it. I hope people saw what these teams are like, because they're incredibly fun to watch and they've got dynamic stars and Zygus Alexander and Donovan Mitchell that are going to be around for a long time. And I just think in general, the thing that really interests me in the league right now, Tim, is this thing we spent the last half an hour talking about, which is you've got a lot of these guys who have been the standard bearers of the league. Steph, LeBron, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, maybe Nikola Jokic, all on these teams that are okay to pretty good, but they're not, it's hard to look at them and say these teams are going to be championship level teams. So what does that say about where the future of the league is going? And how is the new CBA impacting how team building works? And, you know, a team like the Cavs, which doesn't have the kind of star power that typically leads you to championships, you typically need to have one of the guys in the league. You know, if the Celtics, who probably didn't have one of those guys last year, won, and let's say the Cavs win this year with Donovan Mitchell as their best player, that would really be outside the norm of what we've come to learn about what it takes to win in the NBA. So, you know, just in general, we're in this really fascinating inflection point for the league where you have this generation of stars that's beginning to slowly fade out. and you've got this new generation coming in with all these new rule changes and everything that's happening. And it's made for a really fascinating period in the league. It's really wide open. There's a ton of parity. And I think it's, you know, there's a ton of talent across the league. Teams are playing a lot of different styles, but it is just really interesting. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see what the next 5 years look like and where the league is at in 2030, halfway through this new TV deal, and, you know, where things sit and how things have evolved and what it looks like. Because I think it's going to be, it's going to say a lot about sort of what team building in the NBA is going to mean. And it's going to say a lot about what the overall direction of the league is.
You think Cavaliers are better than the Celtics right now?
I don't. I wouldn't pick them to beat Boston in a series, but what I would say is that they've now, to me, cemented themselves as having to be in the inner circle of title contenders, which I didn't have them in before that game on Wednesday. Like, watching them go toe-to-toe with Oklahoma City, most importantly, to me, what stood out was, and it was like watching the early Warriors in that they got whatever they wanted no matter who they were playing, right? Like, Oklahoma City, the prior two games, they played the second and third best offenses in the league in Boston and New York. They completely shut them down in the second half. The Cavs scored 41 in the third quarter and had 25 in the first 6 minutes of the third quarter and just kept getting open dunks, open threes, open layups, making all their plays, doing all their stuff. And you're talking about one of the great defensive teams we've seen in the Thunder team, and they couldn't really do anything to them. And some of that was the Cavs had a lot of shots, but a lot of it was the Cavs just ran their stuff really well and the Thunder couldn't stop it. So, you know, I'm very curious to see how the Cavs look going forward. I still think there's question about their perimeter defense. For as good as the bigs are, they don't have a lot of guys to really guard guys in the perimeter. I think you saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander kind of got where he wanted in a lot of the game. Didn't hit as many shots as he normally would. And they had a lot of trouble with Jalen Williams because they just don't have the guys to guard those kind of guys. But the two big guys are great. They get up a ton of threes. Kenny Atkins has done an unbelievable job, you know, giving freedom and confidence and, you know, aggression, controlled aggression to the Cavs to play the way they do. And it's super fun to watch. And if you told me we got Cavs Celtics in May, sign me up for that, because I think that's got a chance to be a terrific series. And almost as importantly, it's got a chance to be a series with some staying power, with some teams with some longevity to them and some guys in their prime who've got some runway. And maybe that, you know, maybe between those two teams and the Knicks, another team with a bunch of guys signed up for a few years, we could be looking at those three teams atop the East for a while.
Yeah. And yeah, repeated series and rivalries and, you know, emotions carrying year to year. That's what I think sustains the league. It isn't necessary.
1,000%.
Yeah, it isn't. You know, the Lakers, Warriors, Celtics, Knicks, I mean, those are the four that would matter no matter what. But it's year after year. It's guys going at each other in their primes. Those were the documentaries are about, right? Those are the stories that we tell.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah,
when,
it's Warriors,
you know,
Cavs. We're still living in the aftermath of Warriors, Cavs, right? Like that was, you know, the Heat. It was the Heat before that. And it was Warriors, Cavs like that. We're just not going to see something like that again. There's a reason why it only had happened once in the history of the league before that. Like, it just, it was an incredible moment in time. And it, I still think the league is still trying to, you know, still trying to sort out what the next steps are from that. But, you know, you look at this Thunder team, like, we've seen them play Dallas. There's a lot of bad blood there. Mm-hmm. I hope they play again in the playoffs. That would be great. You know, the Cavs played the Celtics last year. It'd be great if they play again this year in the playoffs.
That guy in San Antonio would be really,
he's coming. We haven't even talked about him. I mean, he's just unbelievable, right? Like, that's what I mean. I just, for the people that sort of talk about sort of these doom and gloom things about the future of the NBA, I just think there's so much exciting young talent. We haven't talked about Anthony Edwards. We haven't talked about Cooper Flagg. Like, you look around the league, there's a ton of talent, and you still got guys like Jokic and Giannis. And, you know, I mentioned Jason Tatum's name once. He's on the defending champs, is the best player on the team. Like, I think the league is in a really good spot. And I think I'm very excited for what the future looks like, but mostly it's, what is the post Steph, LeBron, KD league going to look like? Is that, for the last generation, for my entire time covering the league, that's been the league. It's been those guys have been the standard bearers for the league. And that's why I thought this Cavs Thunder game was so important, because the NBA has to start to show people who the next Standard Bearers are going to be. And it might be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, it might be Donovan Mitchell, it might be those teams, it might be somebody else. But I think you saw on Wednesday night what the next iteration of the league looks like. And to me, we see more of that. It's going to be pretty fun.
I think these playoffs could be kind of a reshuffling. Absolutely. Kind of the reordering of the magnitude of these teams. And I'd be happy for it. And maybe, you know, maybe Wemby gets into there too. And he becomes part of the playoff conversation. So
he doesn't totally this year. Agree. He's coming soon.
Yeah. And he is unbelievable to watch. Just unbelievable to watch that guy. So all good. I will end this. We can go on and on, and Timmy and I kind of do anyway when we sit and talk to each other anyway. But I will go finish this with a question I think I've asked you before, at least a version of it. And of all your Bay Area ties, all your Bay Area knowledge, you are part of the Bay Area family now, I guess Timmy will say. And including a little talk about the All-Star Game coming up in San Francisco. That's on our minds here. What's your favorite restaurant? I'll just say in San Francisco, if you have one, if not in the Bay Area.
Well, I would say my favorite one in SF is a place called the Brazen Head, which is a little hole in the wall place that I'm sure you know of the great George King, the legendary beat writer for the New York Yankees, for the New York Post, my former colleague at the paper record in New York City. When I moved out to the Bay, or might even been when I was going out to the Bay for to cover games. I think it was when I was with the Post. I was going to cover games at Oracle, and George told me to go to Final, which was down the street, and people knew people who ran there, and I became very friendly with the people who ran there because I lived right near there before they sold recently. And he told me to go to Brazen Head, which is a cash only place, and food there is great. Ambiance is great. It's off the beaten path, so you got to go find it. So that would probably be my spot. And since sentimentally, when we would cover the finals there every year, we would always have a huge dinner at Original Joe's, which is not that's not a secret place. But from a sentimental standpoint, those finals were all very fun, and all those years of being around the Warriors and covering those teams and seeing that happen over and over again, and you know. My group of friends, we would always go one night during the finals in SF and go to dinner there. So I would say for those reasons, that place. But yeah, if I'm picking one for people to go to that is a little off the beaten path, I would say go to Brazen Head and you'll have a very good meal.
Excellent, Timmy Bontemps. Great recommendations. You're making me hungry. It is well past lunchtime where I'm at. So and I've skipped lunch because I wanted to be sharp for Tim Bond. I wanted this conversation to be as good as possible. Might have failed there, who knows? But always glad to talk to you, Timmy. Appreciate the time. Appreciate covering a lot of things. Warriors got a lot of issues up in the air. I'm trying to call him tonight. A lot of things are banging around in my head. So I always like the conversation, Timmy. Appreciate it.
Oh, likewise, man. And yeah, as I said before, the Warriors remain fascinating, if not very good.
You should have seen the grin on Timmy's face. I forgot what was even happening that night. You're just grinning, going, "Man, I missed this." Man, I forget
that was the I don't know if we should get into the whole story of what happened there.
I remember. Okay, now I remember. Yes,
but
Joe Lacob involved.
Yes, it was the Saturday night of the Suns Warriors game. KD and Steph going back and forth. The Warriors win. Kuminga has a great game. Draymond comes in and says all kinds of stuff, and you know, it just was like going back in time. It's like the team isn't quite as good, but there's a reason why everybody cares, because it's just they're endlessly fascinating. There's no question about that.
We love it that way, Timmy. All right, thank you so much, everybody. That's the show for today.